You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own unless otherwise stated and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today will be another short show, probably about 30 minutes. And I was looking at the news, and what struck me is I've been seeing stories periodically over the last year of who would be running in the Republican Party. And since I did a show Monday on what I thought who were going to be the candidates of the Democratic Party, I thought I would do a similar thing for the Republican Party, but to really focus on who I think is going to be the front runner. Because if you listen to Monday's show, I thought that a possibility is the current governor of California, and really he's been governor three times, twice when he was much younger, and recently he's been governor, and he probably, although he's been a little bit cagey on this, is going to run, and he's up for re-election in 2014, whether or not he's going to run for another term as governor. Now, in California, you can only run by law today for two terms, but his first two terms would not count. I think if he's going to run for president, he needs to run again for governor. It's not mandatory, but it would give him a much stronger position to say, listen, I ran twice, been elected twice in California, and it's just you're a sitting governor. It's much more effective than you've been out of politics. Now, and the reason I picked Jerry Brown, because he has been a very, very successful politician in terms of getting elected. Now, where he's not been successful is he's run for president three times and lost three times. Now, some people would say, well, that's a negative. Yes, in some extent it is. But anyone that runs for president, the first time you're learning, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. He has learned from those mistakes. And remember the last time he was running against Bill Clinton. And he's not really happy with the Clintons. So given the fact that right now the current thinking in the Democratic Party is Hillary's a shoo-in. She's going to get the nomination, she's going to run, and she's going to get reelected. Well, it didn't happen in 2008. I don't think it's going to happen in 2016. A lot can happen. Again, we're 2 years away, over 2 years away, 2 years and about 9 months away. So it's way early to talk 2016, except to say, okay, of the people that could run, who are the likely candidates? I would say in the Republican Party, it's Senator Rand Paul, followed closely by Senator Ted Cruz. Either one could run. I think the one that's definitely is running, although he's, like anyone, has said he won't make up his mind until after the 2014 election. So we're roughly 9 months from hearing that decision. But he's doing the things that someone running needs to do. He's doing a lot of public speaking across the country, trying to build the party and talks. And what I found impressive, I've listened to a couple of his speeches. He's a very good public speaker. He's not star quality, but he's a good public speaker. And that is, I think, essential. You need to get your message out. You need to be good on your feet. You need to be articulate. And although he's a trained doctor, you would think listening to him that he's really knows the law, or at least he studied the important cases. So he's very, very impressive listening to him. And there have been people that are, to be fair, I've heard comments that were really lukewarm to Senator Paul. I'm not. He's one of my top three candidates, the second one being Ted Cruz. So I think both of them are by far the two leaders. Now, I'm sitting in Texas. On the East Coast, there is a strong following for, at least until very recently, to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. I used to live in New Jersey, graduated from a high school in New Jersey. I have an intuitive understanding of Jersey politics. At best, they're moderate Republicans. They might call themselves conservatives, but they're not. And Governor Christie is simply not my cup of tea. I think he wants to run. And if he gets over the George Washington Bridge fiasco, which I think he has, we'll see. It's a little bit too early. I think he will run. Will I think he's going to get the nomination? No, I do not. Because he simply does not play well with the conservative Republican base. He does play well with the moderate liberal wing. So I'm not counting him out. And he would bring to the table the fact that he's a sitting governor. But we have the Republican Party has a very, very deep bench. And Scott Walker, definitely, Governor Scott Walker, I think will probably make a run for it, as will former Governor Jeb Bush. I'm not a fan of the Bushes, and as someone said in 2016, we don't want to see Clintons or Bushes. And I think that's a fair statement. People don't want to elect another Bush for president, nor do many of them want to elect another Clinton. There are dynasties in politics, and those are two of the immediate ones. The other was the Kennedys. We're not going to see a Kennedy in this race. So there are plenty of Republican governors and senators that will run. But the one that's making probably, I think, clearly is running is Senator Rand Paul. He is very, very impressive. And it would be a tough choice between him and Senator Cruz, but it's too early. I haven't made up my mind, and there are at least one issue where I'm a little bit queasy with Senator Rand Paul, and that's the illegal immigration situation, because I'm not really that impressed with his position. And the reason I say this, the only way you're going to stop illegal immigration is rigorous enforcement. Now, he's for that, so it's not completely a deal breaker yet, but he needs to be very, very clear what he's for, because he says he's for comprehensive immigration reform and working out some way to keep the so-called 11 million. Well, the first thing I would ask the senator, and hope someone will, is what makes you think it's 11 million, Senator? Because I really, truly believe, and no one really knows what the number is, but it's somewhere between 30 and 50 million, and that's the problem. And until you stop illegal immigration, and it's as someone corrected my own, there's no such thing as illegal immigration. You're an illegal alien that should be deported, and that's the problem. That's the only way you're going to stop people from continually breaking into the country and to stop this massive invasion of the United States. And I need to remind the senator, read the Constitution. In there, it's the responsibility of the federal government to protect the states against invasion. And when you have 30 to 50 million illegal immigrants over a period of the last 20 years coming in the United States, committing not one, not two, three or more crimes, namely two of them misdemeanors, but at some point it's a felony. You're breaking into the country. You're not presenting your papers at an inspection point, which you're required under immigration law. And then when you go get documents that are fraudulent so you can work here, and then when you repeatedly work here for years, those are three crimes in and of themselves. And you don't reward illegal behavior. Senator Paul would have my vote because he's a libertarian. But the problem with many libertarians is on the immigration issue, because there are many libertarians, and I consider myself a classical liberal. It's not that for shorthand, I'll say libertarian. But if you want to precisely ask me what is my philosophy, I'm a classical liberal, and I pointedly do that because there are some real purists on the libertarian that profess to be libertarians. I'm not challenging them. But they're all for open borders. And I would say, yeah, I'm for open borders the day you eliminate in its entirety the welfare state. Well, that's not going to happen. Certainly not in my lifetime or in the next 100 to 200 years. So until you completely dismantle the welfare state, I'm not for open borders. And that's the problem. Because with the welfare state, that is one of the magnets. Because you can, well, just think about it. If you come here illegal, you can get your children into schools, local schools. You can get food stamps. You're not supposed to, but you can. You can get welfare. And if you have a medical emergency, you go to the emergency room. It's very, very attractive. We're the wealthiest country in the world, or near the wealthiest. There are one or two that I think are ahead of us today. So as long as you have a huge welfare state, that in and of itself will attract illegal aliens, and is attracting them. I see it every time I go into Kroger, or nearly every time. Someone presents their SNAP card or these WIC vouchers for food, and many of them, you can tell they can't speak a word of English, but they know how to get the card, and they know how to get those slips of paper that enables them to pay for food. You see, you're only going to stop illegal aliens from entering the country until you rigorously enforce the immigration laws. And we've had more than 12 years. Really, we've had going on 20 years, actually going on 25 years, of an invasion of this country. And it's not just the U.S.-Mexican border. About half of the illegal aliens here come into the United States, many of them on student visas, but also tourists and business owners, and they overstay their visa, and they work here. They live and work here and don't want to go back to wherever they came from. So we have a massive illegal alien problem, and it's tens of millions. It's not 11 or 12 million. And I don't, what you need to do is talk to the border, U.S. Border Patrol, and ask them the situation, because they will tell you for every one they apprehend, 3 to 5, at least minimum 3 to 5 get away. And yes, some of this, one or more of those 3 to 5 might go back, but you're still getting 3, 4, or 5, because in many times it's 7 or 8 that get away, that are staying here. And we've had, up until very, very recently, the apprehensions were about 1 million a year. It was sometimes less, sometimes more. It has dramatically dropped because there's a policy of this administration to not apprehend as many. And you're seeing it in the numbers. It's not a question of they're not coming across. They most definitely are. But when the word goes forth not to vigorously enforce the law, this is what you get. So I don't buy this 30 to 40 or 50. Well, it's not 10 million. It's somewhere between 30 and 40 and 50 million. Now, why am I raising this? Immigration is not the top issue, but it is a in the top 10. And this is the one area where there may be a disagreement between me and Senator Paul. And there are certain issues that are deal breakers with me, and this is one of them. Now, he is rather clear that he wants no pathway to citizenship or legal status until, and this is what worries me, until the border has been secured and it's been certified. Well, that's never going to happen. It's never going to happen to Obama, and depending on the whoever the Republican is that gets elected, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. You need enforcement of the existing. That's what the American people are asking for. That's the majority of the opinion. I think what happens is you get to Washington, and it's very, very hard to take a position where the majority of the people that you're listening to on both sides of the aisle are for comprehensive immigration reform in various degrees. And that's the biggest problem I have with the Republican Party, or one of them. Now, where Rand Paul is outstanding, in my mind, is he would be an ideal president to deal with the number one problem facing the American people, and that is out-of-control government spending. Early on in his career, he was trying to cut the budget by $500 billion, a half a trillion. So he knows, first of all, the difficulty of doing that, but he also knows it needs to be done, and it hasn't been done. We really need a president that will downsize the federal government, and Rand Paul fits that ticket as far as I'm concerned. Now, he's also trying to welcome other blacks, Hispanics into the Republican Party. I applaud his good intentions, but I really think you're wasting your time, Senator. maybe in the next 50 years you can bring him back to the party of Lincoln, but we lost him in the 60s, and it's very much a lost cause. And if you don't believe me, how many blacks voted for Barack Obama? I think it's north of 95%. So you can make as many speeches as you want in black neighborhoods, black churches, black university, but you're not going to get many votes there, because they've really become dependent upon the Democratic Party, and they're also dependent on government programs, namely welfare. If you want my advice, not that you're taking it, but if you want my advice, yeah, give your speeches. If you're invited to either Hispanic or black events, wherever they be, universities or in large churches, but I don't think you're going to really move many people to vote for you. Because typically in general elections for president, among Hispanics, you'll be lucky to get 30%, 40% tops, but 30% is probably what you get. Amongst blacks, 20%, 25 tops. I really think you need to focus on what is the number one problem today in America, and that's where I think Senator Rand Paul shines. He knows that we have to real cuts. And he says it, we have to have real cuts, not cuts in the rate of growth, but real cuts. And that's why I think that he will be not only a contender, but has a very good chance of winning the nomination, because his political philosophy, I believe he's a classical liberal and or libertarian, and he knows that the size and the scope of the federal government are way beyond what the Constitution envisioned. So he's very, very good in articulating it, both from a legal aspect, but also from an economics point of view. So I think Senator Rand Paul right now is being designated the front runner. And I really think the only reason he is the front runner is it's really way too early. I always say the proof is in the pudding. And if what I'm hearing informally is correct, that when he's a fairly good public speaker and really impresses people that normally did not go there to be impressed, were somewhat lukewarm, and I've heard that before, I think you got a strong candidate. Now, what's the problem? The Republican establishment is totally against the Tea Party movement, which I'm part of, and so is Senator Rand Paul. He would not be a senator today if it wasn't for the Tea Party and Freedom Works and organizations like that supported him. He's very attractive, though, and this is where I think the time is right for a libertarian or classical liberal to run, is the independents in the United States are growing in numbers. Right now, if you believe the Gallup poll, and they've been polling on this for many, many years, independents, based on their poll, are about 42% of the electorate. Republicans are 25%. So the one segment of the voting population that I think Rand Paul would really appeal to are independents. Those are former Republicans like myself, as well as former Democrats that really are sick of both parties, because both parties have been going on spending sprees. Once they get in power, once they control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, what happens? The Republicans under Bush were totally fiscally irresponsible. I know we were attacked on 9/11, but I finally concluded, although I was really on the fence on this, that Iraq was a mistake, a big mistake. And because of that, we've lost many Americans, were wounded and killed in Iraq. We spent billions of dollars, and so were many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. And it's just as bad as before we went in. They're still killing each other. It's a very much a religious, in terms of the Sunnis versus the Shiites, but also the religious against the sectarians. And they're going to continue killing each other for decades. And when you factor in the Iranian mischief that they're causing throughout the Middle East, and they're Sunnis as well as being Persians, I don't want to send American troops to die or be wounded in the Middle East, and specifically Iraq, Syria, and Iran. I'm very much in favor of sanctions, but you don't have to necessarily, and that can, and in many cases, can and should be construed as an act of war. But that was the proper approach in my mind, and there's some others. But we were on the right track, and then what happened is our president sent Secretary John Kerry to negotiate. And I really don't think the Iranians are negotiating in good faith. I think this is a political game that's being played. It's political theater, and we're looking like weak fools. I'm for stronger and stronger and stronger sanctions, and ultimately that will lead to the overthrow of the current regime in Iran, and that should be the goal. It shouldn't be the goal to start World War III, and that's the problem with Iran. The current regime has the support of the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans. So unless you want to start World War III, it's not advisable to intervene in Iran. But that's where the United States was going, and I think we would have been at war with Iran if former Governor Romney was elected. You see, the problem is the establishment Republicans are, and the leadership of the Republican Party, are mostly big interventionist government statists. They are for intervention abroad, and Senator Rand Paul makes a very, very important distinction, and he gave a speech at the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian think tank in Washington. They do excellent work, but he was making a speech making the point that you have to distinguish between a democracy and a republic. And he was saying, you know, when the children come to the steps of the Capitol and he has about 5 minutes with them, one of the things he asked them about is, are we a democracy or a republic? Senator Rand Paul, like me, knows the answer. We're a republic. Because if we're a democracy, then a majority can dictate things that simply are wrong. And that's what we have today. Our Constitution is not a dead letter yet, but it's quickly becoming that. It's becoming very tattered and more honored in the breach. So he's refreshing in terms of his political philosophy, his ability to express what he calls, and I would call, a constitutional. He would refer to himself as a constitutional conservative. Yeah, I am too. But we don't have the votes. So it's up to someone like Rand Paul to get into a higher office, such as the presidency, and use the pulpit or speaking to convince people. There's an educational role here. Because most of the leadership of both parties for, I call them BIGs, big interventionist government status, the shorthand term, they're collectivists. They're for big government. And many of them are conservatives for big government. And the only difference in my mind between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party is not that they don't want to spend money, because both of them have demonstrated year after year after year that once they get in power, they go nuts. I call it fiscal insanity. And you can see it in the numbers, in the deficits we run up. See, the problem is not the debt. The problem is not the deficit. Those are the consequences of out-of-control government spending. The core central problem of the United States today is out-of-control government spending. And Senator Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky, understands that. And he made the effort, and this is why it impressed me, to try to come up with real cuts in the federal budget. This is a conversation that the nation needs to have, because most Americans don't have a clue how bad it is. Not a clue. Most of our representatives and senators don't have a clue. But they're going to get educated, and it's going to take a crisis. And the crisis will be another recession, and maybe even a worse recession than the one we had starting in December of 2007 and running through June of 2009. I think this time it could be a lot worse, because we really haven't made a lot of fundamental changes. And if you don't believe me, just look at the budget the president will be proposing next week. You know, the trial balloon that was published in the Washington Post is the president, with this budget, is going to say that the era of austerity is over. Well, that's a joke. We never had an era of austerity. Austerity means dramatic cuts. Not cuts in the rate of growth, but real cuts in government spending. We haven't had that. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? The goal is clear, and the Republicans can articulate this. We need a balanced budget. Have they made much progress towards it? Not really. Because as the economy has grown, has recovered to a certain extent from the recession, you would have expected, as did happen, that government tax collections would go up, revenues would go up, and that's what's happening. But spending, and that's why the deficits are smaller these last 2 years, and it'll be smaller the next 2 years. But $500 billion deficit, which the president's budget that he'll send to Congress next week, is not a balanced budget. It's a balanced budget means you have zero deficit. In other words, spending is just as out of control as the day Barack Obama walked in. A matter of fact, it's much worse because for 4 years, it was over $1 trillion. In other words, total government spending exceeded total government revenues by over $1 trillion. That's what a deficit is. But a deficit is just the math number. It's just the residual. The problem is not revenues. We collect a lot of revenues. I think this year it's going to be at least 2.7 or 2.8 trillion. So it's not that the government is not collecting taxes. The American people are overtaxed. You see, that's the bigger problem. We need fundamental tax reform. And that's something that I must say, and I might have missed it, I think that's something that Senator Rand Paul needs to get on. See, there's no magic bullets here as to correcting the out-of-control government spending. There's many things that have to be done. And one, why I'm focusing on the spending as the key problem, and that's where you have to dramatically cut the budgets, if not permanently close down departments, and I think that is something that at least Senator Rand Paul is open to. He might not be as articulate or upfront with it as his father was, and I applaud Congressman Ron Paul, since retired. But that needs to be laid out. And I think if he decides to run, he will. I hope he will, because that needs to be done. There are departments that need to be closed. Agriculture, commerce, education, energy, the interior. You need to sell off all the federal lands to the American people in the state. Transportation, housing, and urban development. Those are the ones. And I always miss one, but those are the ones that need to be shut down permanently. Americans know how to produce and consume food. Americans know how to build cars, trains, you name it, and they know how to buy them. Americans know how to produce housing, apartments, as well as buy and rent housing and apartments. We don't need the government involved. We shouldn't have a Department of Housing or a Department of Transportation. We know how to produce and consume energy. We don't need a Department of Energy. And education occurs on the individual level. There's no point in sending money to Washington so Washington can take a cut in the bureaucracy and then send some money back as a grant. Cut that out completely. And the land that the federal government owns more than 30% of the actual land. In some states, it's actually more, some less. All that land should be sold off because we're running, again, massive deficits that resulted in a dramatic rise in the national debt. So there are a lot of things that Senator Paul needs to flush out, but one that I think he needs to look at, besides the budget and spending, is tax reform. And to truly articulate fundamental tax reform. Forget about immigration for a minute, because what you need to do, the problem in the United States is the federal government is creating a massive amount of uncertainty. And the reason why that is dangerous is jobs are created in the private sector primarily by small business owners. And Dr. Paul was a small business owner. He understands that. A small practice usually employs a number of people, and it can grow into a larger practice. Those are where jobs are created. But it's new businesses that create most of the net jobs that are created. studies are somewhere between 60% and 80%. If you add mid-size, small and mid-size, and I mean small is under 50, mid-size is under 500. Your large corporations that employ a lot of people in the tens of thousands are not the net creators. It's the new business formation that creates the jobs. And what prevents them, what prevents new business formation, which in turn prevents capital formation and investment, is uncertainty in Washington, D.C., generated by these massive deficits, as a direct result of spending being out of control year after year after year, whether it's a Republican or a Democratic president or Congress. It doesn't make any difference. That's why I'm not a Republican anymore. I'm very much an independent. I've had enough. I looked at it and said, of all the people that I could have elected for president, the only one individual that I could point to, and I'm not totally happy with him, but I'm a lot more happy than the others, is Ronald Reagan. And part of my complaint with Reagan is, and I understand he didn't control Congress, is the spending. We did run deficits, huge deficits, when he was president. Now, he did have fundamental tax reform, but the problem is you have to be willing to spend the political capital and educate the American people as to why you have to downsize the federal government. And that needs to be done. You see, he's not talking about, and this is a little concern. I was very optimistic when early on, when he was elected, he was talking about his $500 billion budget cut. And it got a certain amount of coverage. But then and I don't follow the senator that closely, but my impression or perception is he stopped talking about that. And today he's talking about another issue that's of concern with me is the National Security Agency. And that's important. Privacy is important. And that gets a lot of publicity, and that resonates with most Americans. I understand why he's emphasizing this. But the reality is, and the NSA is collecting all this information, invading our privacy, and they need to be stopped. And I'll applaud his efforts in this and hope he wins the suit. But the reality is, given the mission of the NSA, the likelihood of any single American really being targeted and put on a hit list is negligible. The real threat is that this can be used by an unscrupulous president, a president with an integrity problem, and that includes the existing president, can be used to get information that can be used as leverage against his political opponents. And I have no assurance or comfort that that hasn't already happened. None at all. It only takes the placement of certain key people in the NSA and into the Justice Department and in the FBI to run roughshod over the Constitution and dig dirt. Remember, we used to have an FBI director, Herbert Hoover, that's exactly what he did against the powers that be in Washington, D.C. He got the dirt on congressmen and senators. And they knew it. And he used it and was willing to use it. Well, it's many times worse with the NSA. Do I know it's happening now? No, I don't. But it's a threat to your liberty and my liberty that they have this capability. And you can joke about it as much as you want, but is a direct threat to the Fourth Amendment, and to his credit, Senator Rand Paul is out in front on this. But the NSA's job is to spy on citizens of other countries. They have a big important job. I'm not against the NSA. I just wish they never turn their capabilities on the American people. I think that was a fundamental mistake. And they're going to be paying a price for it. And that's unfortunate because I don't really think they have the resources to do what they're doing now, because first you got to intercept it, then you got to decrypt it if it's encoded, and you got to translate it, and you got to make sense of it. And your threat is nations that are hostile to the United States, and that's many billions of people. So they have a big job. And yes, they got computers and all to assist them in doing it, but we rely, the United States, as well as the president, rely on the national security agents to provide much of our intelligence. Much, not all, but much of it. It's not human intelligence, it's communications or signals intelligence. Both the military as well as, you know, spying on foreign governments. That's what they do. They do read other people's mail. They do listen to their communications, no matter what form it takes, whether it's telephone conversations, whether it's email, whether it's video or video conferencing, whether it's photographs, tweets, you name it, the NSA is going after it, especially of those abroad. But they have a really insurmountable problem because it's growing every day. And what they need to do is focus on the real threats, not turn the NSA into a threat on the liberties of the American people. And that is the perception I'm getting and other people are getting. And yes, I'm not of the camp that Ed Snowden is a hero, nor do I think he's a traitor. He did a public service in making the American people aware of the extent of the NSA going after the communications of the American people. So I applaud him, but he broke the law, and he'll pay a price for it. But he was, as far as I'm concerned, a whistleblower. Now, some will say he's a leaker. Definitely he's a leaker. And some will argue he's not a whistleblower. I think he is, until proven otherwise. And I don't think planted stories by the NSA or the government, U.S. government, to make him out like a traitor. They got to prove their case. They have a credibility problem, because they've been lying to the American people. Now, what disturbs me is who should be protecting the U.S. citizen against this violation of our Fourth Amendment rights? It's the people that we elect in the Senate and in the House. And most of the leadership that should have been aware, both on the Intelligence Committee and Oversight Committee, looked the other way. You see, what happened is we had 9-1-1, and then Congress panicked. Because what the American people were saying, listen, we send you there, you spend billions of dollars, whether it's the CIA or the National Security Agency or military intelligence agencies, and you literally cannot protect the United States against the 9-1-1 attack. You see, that was probably the number one failure of U.S. intelligence in the entire history of U.S. intelligence. And nobody got fired. They got more money and more people, more budget, bigger bureaucracy. And that's part of the problem. There was no accountability. We all have to be united and go after the enemy. Well, I'm relying on the federal government to protect me against terrorist attacks such as 9-1-1. Haven't done a good job, have they? I'm relying on the United States government under the Constitution to protect me against invasions of millions, tens of millions of people, both across our U.S.-Mexican border as well as flying in here. And the federal government simply is not up to the job, because the leadership don't want the job to happen. And that's where I think Senator Paul really needs to take a hard look at his position. Now, he is very much... I have a problem with Senator Paul in the immigration area. Let's be clear. And I have a similar but not as much of a problem with Senator Cruz. And I think what both of them are making the mistake, and I think it's a big mistake, is buying the number of 11 or 12 million. I don't think that's a real number. Because I'll tell you this, I think it's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. And if you ask me to put a point estimate on it, I'll say at least 40 million. It's a broad range. I don't know, but I'll tell you who does know or can get the answer is the National Security Agency. They probably have a better idea, and they're not talking. There's a reason they're not talking. If I'm right, and it's not me being right, but relying on what the U.S. Border Patrol is saying, that for every one person they apprehend, in other words, they detain or arrest them, and eventually put them in a detention center and send them back, for every one apprehension, the minimum is 3 to 5 get away. And many times it's 6, 7, or even a dozen. Well, you can do the math. If it's a million, if you multiply by, let's say, 4, that's 4 million a year. And this has been going on for over a dozen years. And yes, some go back. My point being this, Senator Cruz and Paul, once the American people wake up to this, and they are waking up to this, you can't miss it. I'm in Dallas. I see illegal aliens every single day in Dallas, in my apartment complex, on this campus, and all across Dallas. You can't miss them. You know, they're not in the shadows, wherever that is. They're out in the open, working, taking jobs that American citizens should be having and in the past performed. And don't give me this nonsense. These are jobs that American citizens wouldn't take. Talk about being racist. That is. These are jobs that I've done and millions, tens of millions of Americans in the past have done. But what happened is the ruling elites, both in the Democratic Party and Republican Party, decided to go for comprehensive immigration reform. Started the Bush administration. And it was stopped. Who stopped it? The American people. Why did they stop it? Because they were seeing what I was seeing. There's an unwillingness on the part of the Washington elite to enforce immigration law. That's the only thing that the American people are asking for. Enforce the law. Because if you did, we would stop this illegal immigration in its tracks, and it should be stopped. There's a reason there are over 20 million Americans today looking for a permanent full-time job. And I'm not saying that illegal immigration is the only problem. That is one part of the problem. And if you rigorously enforce the law, would mean 5 to 10 million, at least, Americans could go back to work. But the other problem is the fact, because of out-of-control government spending, increasing economic uncertainty, business formation and capital formation are dramatically down. And that's where the jobs are. And that's where the solution is. Because if we had an economic system that wasn't burdened with taxes and regulation, that's why you need to have fundamental tax reform. The more businesses that are formed means more growth, more jobs, and it ultimately means more tax revenue, both income taxes, personal and corporate, and payroll taxes. That's why the revenue side is very important in terms of tax revenues, and that means scrubbing, eliminating, replacing the existing income tax system and substituting it with a broad-based consumption tax, and like the fair tax. I'm really for fair tax less, which is a 20% tax on any new good or service that you buy. Everyone would pay it, and like the fair tax, everyone would get a rebate. I'd keep it real simple. Every individual, every month, gets a $500 check mailed to their checking account as a rebate to make the tax system progressive. And after that, anything you buy that's new, a new good or service, you would pay a 20% tax. It's like a sales tax, but it replaces all the existing federal taxes. And I broaden it to all. You're paying it today. When you buy a loaf of bread, just to keep it simple, let's say you buy a white bread for a dollar. About 23 cents of that dollar is embedded taxes for payroll taxes, personal and corporate taxes. So if you abolish or replace all those taxes, in other words, your gross paycheck would be your net paycheck. When you go buy the bread, you're going to have a bigger paycheck, but anything you buy, you're going to pay the taxes. So it's hard to cheat in that situation, because most of the revenue would be collected at the cash register of wherever you go shopping and sent to the federal government. Now, what would that do? It would encourage investment. It would encourage savings. It would encourage job formation. You see, where I think the senator is weak is not talking about fundamental tax reform and really getting off talking, no longer talking about the budget. Now, his latest crusade, if you will, is on the National Security Agency, which is a hot issue. I'm not criticizing him for that. I'm just as upset with the NSA as he is. But you need to focus. There's always going to be a list of issues. And I can think of at least a dozen. But you should definitely focus on a top three or four. That is spending, taxes, and illegal immigration. But by far, out-of-control spending and taxes, you should be talking about anytime you open your mouth. Those are hot-button issues. Those are pocketbook or wallet issues. No one understands the federal income tax system today. No one. It is so complex. This is a system invented almost 100 years ago. Well, it is 100 years old. This is not what a modern economy should have. We shouldn't be wasting tens, hundreds of billions of dollars every year in compliance just filling out federal income tax forms. Abolish it. Abolish it and eliminate the IRS. I'm not saying you won't need some people to process the tax collections in the Treasury. But what would happen is just today, when you go to any store, what do you pay? You pay in Texas and in most states, you pay a sales tax. And that sales tax is forwarded to the state of Texas. Every day, every week, every month, that's what's going on. The same thing would happen with a fair tax or a fair tax less. I call it fair because one of the criticisms of a sales tax is it's regressive. So the people that came up with the fair tax, which I like, my big exception or two exceptions with it, is the taxes to, it was based on being revenue neutral. In other words, collecting the same amount of money as we are collecting today. The problem is nonsense. The American people are overtaxed. Instead of their 23% tax, I would make it 20. Keep it simple and give everyone a $500 rebate. I'm waiting for Senator Paul to address this, to get back on the budget issues and get back on the tax issues. Because if we really want to get an economic growth rates exceeding the historically rate of 3%, that's what we need to be focused on. And what, as much as I am concerned with the National Security Agency as what it's doing and applaud his lawsuit, that is not going to get millions of Americans back to work. And that should be the theme of his campaign, putting Americans back to work. And you do it by downsizing the federal government, by getting control of the budget, by balancing the budget, frankly, by having surpluses. And that means also entitlement reform. I didn't mention that, but that's going to have to happen. So there are a lot of issues that Senator Paul needs to get up to speed on. I'm sure he has developing a team of people and trying to get up to speed. He has a lot on his plate. But my only advice to him, if he truly wants to be the Republican nominee for president, yes, continue speaking. Get on the news shows. But you're going to need a message that resonates with the American people. And their number one concern is jobs and employment. So you need to speak to the economic policy issues that are going to do that. In other words, increase employment. And it's not more taxes. It's not more regulations. He understands that. But he has to spell out what he's going to cut. And he's going to have to articulate that. And there's going to be tens of millions of people that will resist it. The Democrats are going to resist this. They're for more and more spending. It's not that they don't have a clue what's going on. They really don't care. Because what they see is they have always been and always will be the party of Santa Claus. And that's what they've become. They're bribing voters. The problem is they're out of money. So what are they going to do? More and more taxes. More and more spending, more and more taxes. And we'll use the spending to buy votes. What Senator Paul needs to do, and there's a way to counter that. It's not hard to understand. I'm for reducing taxes. Not only regulation and spending, but taxes. And that means fundamental reform and scrubbing, eliminating, and replacing the current income tax system with a broad-based consumption tax, to make it simple, a sales tax, a national sales tax of 20% with, and this is important, a rebate for every individual. Man, woman, and child in the United States would get every month a check for $500. We're not subsidizing them. We're just saying we realize that everyone has minimum needs for food, clothing, housing. So to eliminate, if not entirely, most of the regressive nature of any sales tax or fair tax, we're going to give everyone $500. So if you are a family, for example, Senator Paul is a family of five, he would get every month a check for $500 for each member in his family, or $2,500. Now, he's going to spend that and a lot more. But that rebate is to make sure, remember, this fair tax will be going on all goods and services, including food, including medical services, hospital bills, everything that's a new good or service. That's what the rebate is for. But you need to educate the American people about it. There's a lot of support for this fair tax, but here's the problem. There's a real lot of opposition. So Senator Paul needs to pick and choose what topics he's going to emphasize, what issues he's going to speak on. and why I'm impressed so far with his outspokenness on the National Security Agency, and at least initially on his budget. If he's truly going to run for president and be a front runner and get the nomination, he has to, in some sense, refocus what he's doing on economic issues, because that's what the Gallup poll is saying, and I know this is true. American people are concerned about the economy, and they're concerned about jobs, and what is causing the problem with the economy, and what has caused the problem with jobs. It's out-of-control government spending and a tax system that no one understands that is ruining this nation, that discourages investment, discourages savings, and also discourages business formation. It's about time to get rid of this bad idea called the income tax. And if you ran on that, you would get a lot of independent votes. So I'm giving you some free advice, but you need to start really zeroing in on this. Now, you got some time. Some would say plenty of time. But becoming a lawyer and given the legal issues on the National Security Agency in regard to privacy rights, why impressive, and I'm sure people on your staff got you up to speed on this, that's not the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth problem that the American people are articulating they can see as a problem or concern with the United States. It's health care, it's employment, it's jobs, it's out-of-control spending, it's massive deficits and debts. And there's only so many issues that you can really run on. I would limit it to six. And now you need to be up to speed on everything, or mostly everything, but you need to zero in on those top 10, and really it's really the top half dozen. And you need to be articulate on it. I think he has the mental ability to do this. He has the speaking ability to do this. Now, I saw one speech that he had a teleprompter, but I didn't get a sense he was reading a speech. You see, when I do this show, I walk in, I don't have a script. I do have a sense of which news stories I want to emphasize, but this is very much no script. So I have to be knowledgeable about a broad range of topics. Now, Rand Paul might be the right person at the right time, and he has time to get message is going to be very, very important here. So is money, because you better believe the Republican establishment does not want Ron Paul to be the candidate or get elected president. Mark my words. What they did to his father, they will try to do to him. That's one reason I'm not a Republican today. You see, they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. And I'm not recommending he run as a third-party candidate. But if the Republicans continue down this road, it's only a matter of time before a viable third-party candidate, a new third party, will arise. And I think that tipping point is when independents become more than 50% of the vote. Because more and more people are saying a plague on both houses. They don't want anything to do with the Democratic Party, and they don't want to do anything to do with the Republican Party. Why? They're not addressing the concerns of the American people. They're showing an elitist, a ruling elite's attitude of arrogance, and really could care less about the American work. There are exceptions. There are always exceptions, and Rand Paul is one of them, as is Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and others in the Senate and the House. So I think Senator Rand Paul will be a candidate. He'll probably announce it sometime in either late November, early December. And right now, he would be one of my choices to vote for. He would get my vote. But he's going to have a lot of competition from not only the Republican establishment, but also people in the Tea Party movement. It's not a lock, and he knows this. He's going to have to earn it, but he's doing the right things. He's going to hostile audiences and making speeches. That's good. Why? You learn what their concerns are. You learn what the questions are. You learn what's on people's mind, and that's what you need to do. You can't hide out. You got to be out front. You got to have the courage and the integrity to do this, and that's one thing I need to say. What I am really sick of is politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, that have a character problem, an integrity problem. They're unabashed liars, or worse. They're bought and paid for. They're corrupt. and they're corrupting. So he's somewhat refreshing in that sense, because I don't think he has an integrity problem. I have not seen it yet. There are plenty others that will be running that do have it on both sides of the aisle. And that could always change. I don't know Senator Rand Paul. Never spoken to him. Probably never will. But I'm impressed with what I've seen so far, as I am impressed with Senator Cruz. But Senator Cruz, I was talking to someone about this, and I like and would support Senator Cruz as well. But, and here's a but, he does have a unique ability to annoy people. He doesn't annoy me, but I see it there. I know what people are talking about. And that's why he generates a certain amount of hostility. Now, I'm sure Rand Paul is generating some hostility too, probably in the same areas, but his edges are, I guess what I'm trying to say, his edges are a little rounder. Well, with that said, I probably have gone over. It's just going to be an hour show. I thank you for listening. I think we'll definitely be hearing more from Senator Rand Paul, as well as the other Republican contenders. I would not count out Senator Ted Cruz, nor several of the governors. Probably leading the list is Governor Scott Walker, as well as several others. The Republican Party has a very strong bench. It is way too early to pick a candidate. I usually indicate who I favor and support. I don't really endorse anybody because I'm trying to be a commercial radio talk show host, syndicated nationally. And I don't really think it's the role of radio talk show hosts to really endorse anybody. But that doesn't mean they don't express their opinion, nor tell which candidates they favor and which they don't. I definitely favor Senator Rand Paul as well as Senator Cruz, and we'll wait to see about the other Republicans. It takes a lot to decide to run for president. It's going to be a tough 2 years. And it's hard on the families. It's not something you should do casually. Now, many of them can't resist doing it, but they quickly find they don't have what it takes to run and to win. Someone asked him, are you in it just to be like your father, to make a point, or you're in it to win? And he didn't skip a beat and said, if I'm going to run, it's to win. And that's the right attitude. You need ambition, but the key is, and let me wrap it up, for Senator Rand Paul or anyone else running for president, you need what I call mama. You need money. You need organization. You need message. You need no momentum. But you also need ambition. So many have the ambition, but they really can't deliver on the money, the organization, or the message. I think Rand Paul has the right message. It needs to be more focused on economic issues that are the concern of the American people. And if he does that, the money and the organization will come to him. But he has to demonstrate that he's a winner, and I think he will do that. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD.